Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Kim.
And I'm Sharon Kim.
And welcome to Research Sense for Korean American Therapy, a podcast that removes barriers and gives you a rundown of the latest Korean American mental health research.
Hello, everyone. Today's episode is called Bullying and Discrimination Experiences Among Korean American Adolescents. This was written by Jin Y. Shin, Emily D'Antonio, Hae-in Son, Song Ah Kim, Yeri Park in 2011. So I was really excited to read this because I know you are an expert in school bullying, Dr. Sam. So I had a lot of questions to ask you.
You're only allowed to ask one.
Oh, no. Okay. The first one is, what is school bullying? What is categorized as school bullying?
Bullying is a term that's thrown around a lot, and I've seen it used very casually to mean anything from someone being sarcastic to name calling to, you know, things that all of us would probably agree is actually bullying. The definition of bullying that's most widely accepted and used today has three parts. And the first part is that there is a power difference of some sort. So when I say power difference, most people think one kid who's a lot stronger than the other. That's one kind of power, but there's also social power. Who is the leader of a group of friends or something? They have a certain level of power or social capital that's available to them. So a power difference between one kid and another. The second part is intention. And intention is important because nobody accidentally bullies someone else. It's done because one person intends to harm another kid, whether physically. The article today talks about three different kinds: physical harm, verbal harm, and what they call psychological, and sometimes it's referred to as relational bullying. And then the third aspect is this repetition. And this part of the definition tends to be the most controversial, as some would say, you know, only takes one incident for it to be bullying. What others say is like, no, it needs to happen repeatedly. Like, it's not just a one-time thing. But generally, bullying has those three aspects: that there's a power difference, there's an intention to harm, and that there is repetition over time.
I am so glad I led with that question because I don't think I was thinking of all the different aspects of bullying, especially the intention part and the repetition. Another question that I had is the research that we're discussing for today is about how bullying impacts the mental health of Korean American adolescents. But can you tell me more about how bullying affects and impacts students' mental health and their development?
Lots of ways, and all the ways that are not good. There's been numerous studies showing the negative outcomes, links to academic deficiencies like academic performance falling, things to depression, anxiety, senses of isolation, and such. There's just so many different kinds of negative outcomes from bullying. And that's not just for those who have been victimized by bullying. Those who report being bullies also report negative outcomes as well. So it's not like they're doing all great either. And then there's another category that most people don't think about that we call the bully victim. So someone who has been victimized by bullying in the past, they themselves turn around and become bullies as well, whether it's the same time or maybe they were bullied in the past and that's how they behave in the future. There's different groups within the bullying ecosystem. And then there's a fourth group that most people don't think about either, which are bystanders. And so people who witness or see it or kind of on the outskirts. And though the bystanders tends to be a big group, there's also the uninvolved group within those bystanders. So people who may not even have heard of what was going on or witnessed what was going on, they're just kind of there. I think another aspect that's really important to think about with bullying is that there are different forms of bullying. So the physical that we all think about is the hitting, the pushing, the kicking that goes on. There's the verbal, which is the taunting, name calling, making fun of, etc. The psychological, relational, so spreading rumors about somebody, excluding them from a group. And then there's a fourth one that the article kind of alluded to, but many consider it in the bullying literature to be its own separate kind of thing. And that's cyberbullying, so bullying that happens online. It behaves a little bit differently from the other ones, and it's like its own little subgroup within the literature.
When I approached this article, I was only thinking about victims. Oh, what's going on with their mental health? And then I learned that they are bullies, victims, bystanders, in bully victims, that was my first time learning about that, and how bullying actually affects all of their mental health. It's not just the victims, but also the bullies and also the bystanders and the bully victims, obviously.
A lot of the bullying intervention research that's out there are some programs that are specifically about bullying, but a lot of them try to target the school climate or the school as a whole, because oftentimes it's like a systemic issue that's going on, or certain kids are not being reached through the various resources within the schools.
So when you work with schools, because you've done that a lot in the past, what was something that was really challenging working with schools to prevent bullying? And like you said, it's a systemic thing. So how do you tackle that?
It's very hard. Changing or doing interventions for school climate is never an easy thing, because you're talking about the change of an entire ecosystem with hundreds and in some states, thousands of kids in one school. And I think the thing that I want our listeners to take away that's most important is social supports. That's one of the things when I was learning about bullying and going through the research literature, that it is a powerful factor of resilience for kids. So social supports could be friends, it could be family, it could be trusted adults within that environment that they can go to. If you can find places of refuge, places where you can feel safe within the school system, that goes a long way of tackling that issue. It's not the end all be all solution, but it's out there. There have been several nationwide studies looking at large groups of students across the country. And generally, the statistic lands around about 20% of kids have reported that they've been bullied at some time in school. What is important about this particular paper that we're looking at is it's not looking at all kids, it's looking at Korean American adolescents. What is the prevalence of bullying for this group? Or does this group even go through and experience bullying?
This research pointed out that there have been no studies conducted on the bullying experiences of Korean American youth. This is the first study to do so. And the numbers that they found were really, really alarming. I can only imagine what happened during the pandemic with cyberbullying and social media usage going up and all of those things. What this paper was saying is that Asian American youth usually report higher levels of emotional distress than other ethnic group adolescents. And they were wondering, is bullying a factor of mental health distress for Asian Americans, specifically Korean American youth?
And that's a big thing, because another thing that they reported within the paper is that students who adhere more closely to their Asian heritage tend to be more susceptible to other mental health outcomes like lower self-esteem, anxiety, depression. And part of that could be that they're trying to balance two aspects of their identity, the individualistic Western values that they're getting versus the traditional collectivistic values from the Eastern heritage. It could also be that adolescents tend to notice and pick on things that are different about a student. So, if a student is clinging more closely to their Asian heritage, they may be more susceptible to bullying because they seem different. Or, I still remember in the fifth grade, the last time I ate Korean food for breakfast was my mom had me eat kimchi jjigae, and the smell just lingered on me as I came into school and was made fun of for that smell. So I can see like some of those things coming into play for a child going through school, especially for Korean Americans.
So, how was this research conducted?
There were 295 Korean American high school students in the New York and New Jersey area recruited from 73 different high schools. And kudos to the researchers, because that sounds like a Herculean task. I know that the numbers don't seem high, but just take for a moment in a U.S. school, just think about finding 300 Korean American high school students who'd be willing to take a survey for you. I think that's a pretty hard task to find all these people and to go to 73 different schools. This is not easy stuff.
I agree. This is really great that they found these many students to partake in the study. So their ages ranged from 13 to 19 years old. Half of them were US born, and they used various measures to survey bullying experiences, their depression, racial and ethnic discrimination, the ethnic composition of the schools, and their demographic information. So what did the researchers find?
Well, they did a slightly more complex analysis using different kinds of modeling programs that are out there, but we decided to just distill in certain aspects that we think might be most insightful for our listeners out there. So the first one is amongst Korean American adolescents of the 295 high schoolers who took the survey, 29%, so about a third of those Korean Americans reported that they had been bullied at some point. And because of that bullying, or those who reported being bullied, also reported higher levels of depression, which is what we expected and what's been found before.
What was really interesting about the measure that they used for bullying is that they were asked certain things, like, where were you bullied, if you were bullied? And they have different selections, like, was it after school or in the cafeteria, etc.? And the victim group said it was usually after school. And then the second most frequent place was in the cafeteria. And then third most frequent place was online or cyberbullying that Dr. Sam talked about, and in the hallway. And then they also asked, what do you think was the reason for you being bullied? And the most frequent reason that was mentioned was country of origin and they're being different. And we're going to compare that with what the bully group says about that.
And that goes back to what we were saying earlier, that a lot of kids, if they cling on to their heritage, they may be, and not to say all of them out there. So if we have any parents that are listening, it doesn't mean tell them to shed their Korean identities. But for some students and the way they hold on to their heritage, they might be perceived as different and thus making them more susceptible to victimization. 75% of the respondents reported that there are bystanders, but that's expected. We expected a large group of them to be the ones who are either those who've seen bullying or those who just aren't involved. About 32% reported that they were bullies. So these are the ones who are perpetrating bullying. And they also were asked the most frequent places and the reasons for why they bully. And what were they, Sharon?
The most frequent places where bullying happens, according to the bully group, was very similar to the places that the victim group reported. Bullying usually happened after school, in the cafeteria, in class, and in the hallways. But the most frequent reasons that the bully group reported for bullying others was being a wimp, or they were too fat, or their face looked funny, their friends were weird. All these reasons weren't related to the ethnicity or the country of origin of the victim, but it was more about them being weird. They were different. Their face looked funny. So that was something interesting that was found through the study.
It almost sounds like because of that difference, they wanted to have a show of power. Even though I am different, I am still a powerful human being. And it could be, and not to say that all of them are, but it could be that that might be related to why they engage in these behaviors. But again, kids are very complex, and so they could be for a lot of different reasons. And then the final group that they talked about in the study are the bully victim group. So these are kids who have been victimized by bullying, and they are also bullies themselves. And we had about 16% of students report that they were bullied and they bullied others. For those listening to us, listening to the percentages very closely, you're probably calculating, like, wait a second, this doesn't add up to 100%. And that's because I don't think they separated the victim and the bully to bully and victim. I think it's kind of all overlapping. And then this is a group that has a certain threshold of being a bully and a victim. And so there's some overlap with some of these numbers here.
And they also found that the adolescents who were categorized as bully victims experienced higher levels of depression than those who were not bully victims. And this was also their level of depression compared to the general Korean American adolescent mental health. The bully victims and just victims of bullying had higher levels of depression as well. So consider this, Korean American adolescents are already an at-risk group because this ethnic group is susceptible to mental health challenges and they don't seek help as much as they should. And within that group, the victims and the bully victims are even at higher risk because they experience higher levels of depression than the general Korean American population.
And I don't think they went into it in this paper, but a lot of the research literature has come out saying that those in the bully victim group tend to have the worst mental health outcomes compared to the victim group or the bully group, and certainly compared to the bystander group. So they have the worst in terms of mental health outcomes. And I kind of want to address a question that you had asked me as we were kind of prepping for this. And it's like, how can someone be a bully and a victim? And what does that look like? And it looks a lot of different ways. There's so many different ways that this could come about. It could be that they were victimized in the past and now they're bullies. It could be that they might have an older sibling at home who is bullying them, and then they come to school and they bully someone else in a similar way that they are bullied. There's just lots of different ways that that could look like.
So what are the implications of the study?
Don't be a bully.
I think as a former educator, I was shocked. When we talk about school bullying, all I thought was about the victims themselves and, oh, what do we do for the victims? But I wasn't thinking about the bullies, and I wasn't thinking about, especially about the bully victim group. I think that really opened my eyes on, I need to be more empathetic about the whole ecosystem of bullying.
And it's very hard for teachers because let's say you have two students in your class and one is a bully and the other is regularly victimized by that bully. When you casually hear a story about victimization and bullying, you think, oh, the teacher should just get rid of the bully and get them out of the classroom. But this is a little bit more of a nuanced view because it's showing that, well, that student could also be hurting and going through things. And this is kind of how they are expressing that hurt. It's not healthy, it's not great, but they are going through that. The other challenge that a lot of teachers and adults have is we often tell students, well, let the teacher know, tell the teacher. And then once the teacher finds out, what are they supposed to do? It is possible for the teacher to exacerbate the situation and to make it worse. So not only is the student being victimized for, let's say, being different, but now they're going to get picked on for being a tattletale.
What would you say to listeners out there who are parents and they have kids in elementary, middle, or high school? Is there any practical advice on how to check in with their children, whether they are being bullied or are bullies themselves? What do you do as a parent?
It's tough. It is really tough, especially if you don't have the best of relationships. It is so very, very hard. And that's why I always emphasize to parents of younger children, start building in, I refer to it as non-contingent family time. And what that means is there's a time that you and the child spend together doing whatever you want, watching movies, playing a game, talking, going to the grocery store, to the park, whatever works for y'all, that is not dependent on anything. Like they won't earn it and they won't lose it because they're bad or they've done something. It is non-contingent because you really want to build that relationship so that when they become adolescents and are going through something like this, you have that good open communication and you can spend time problem solving with them to figure out what's the best thing to do for this situation. So I know that's not helpful, especially if there's a parent who has a child going through bullying, because there's no magic bullet for it. There's no end-all solution to everything. A lot of it depends on your child, your situation, and your school. I would say that the first thing to do is make sure that you have a clear idea of what's going on with your child, and then talking with the school teacher, the administrators, and seeing what can they do, what has been observed, what steps can be taken there. And I know it's not the best advice that's given because it does come short at times. And I know of families who move specifically so that their child won't be in any particular school. The other people that you could talk to within the school include the school counselor, school social worker, as well as the school psychologist. These are mental health professionals who work in various schools, and they could be tapped for advice and can help with situations too. So I would suggest reaching out to them if that's possible.
That's really helpful. That's helpful to create that safe space and tying back to what you mentioned in the introduction, how you want to create social supports for your children and you want to be one of those social supports for your children, right? And so creating that space for them where it's non-contingent to anything and having an open communication with them, knowing exactly what's going on, and then to be able to talk to their school administration and their teachers of whatever is going on and trying to solve together and advocating for your child, I think is really important.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a unexpectedly heavy article that we talked about. And we hope that you'll join us next time for our next episode. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our episode, please subscribe to our podcast and check out more at mustardseedgeneration.org.
And samuelykim.com. To keep these episodes coming, rate and share on wherever you listen to this podcast.